Let's bring in our next guest, David Pignota of the Fourth Period, joining us. So who's the next old guy that the Leafs sign?
Johnny Bauer. let's see. Still Apps.
Yeah.
Who else? What year is this?
They're just going to bring back franchise legends. Yeah, I mean, they could go down that road.
So Brian Trotche, he's not doing anything right now.
No, and the Wendell Clark mentions you get in Toronto, it feels like he still plays for the team, so you might as well bring him back too, right?
Yeah, he's always around, so he's a community ambassador for the team here. So
I mean, Doug Gilmore's still doing those insurance commercials. I'm sure they could bring him back too.
Get him. Mario Tremblay's part of that. He can yell at people for no reason. That'd be great.
I don't get it, man. Like, look, are they just doing it for the feels? Like, you know, are they just doing it for the likes on Twitter? Like, how do you have Jason Spezza and Joe Thornton on the same team and not get like roasted in your bottom six because they're just too old and slow?
Well, I mean, you know, first of all, they have to make another move. They had to make another move before signing him. But there's going to be some other correlating deal that eventually has to happen here. They already moved Andreas Johnsson over to Jersey for nothing. Not for nothing, for a fourth line guy in Joey Anderson, whom they have to sign as well. He's an RFA. I don't know. I've been trying to wrap my head around this, and I understand the situation, and I understand that, you know, he feels that this is a better opportunity than San Jose to try to chase down a Stanley Cup. And by the way, he let the guys know in San Jose, he let his teammates know earlier today of his decision before, you know, making everything official with Toronto. He loves it out there, and he loves his now former teammates. So, you know, he felt that was the right thing to do, to give him a heads up before this got out. Class guy all the way. Great guy, and certainly going to change the dynamic of the locker room in Toronto for the better. So I'm sure that's part of it as well. But he's not coming here, or he wouldn't have signed outside of San Jose, to simply be a PR move, to simply be a guy who's not going to be playing on a regular basis for his new team, which is now the Toronto Maple Leafs. So they obviously feel that he can still contribute in a bottom six setting. I'm sure he'll get some power play time as well, and bring that leadership that he brings, and the way that he connects everybody in the room, as great as he does, as one of the assets that he's bringing with him. But Toronto has to figure out something else. Is he going to play on the wing? Is he playing center? Are they keeping Alex Kerfoot? Are they not? Are they? Please tell me they're not putting Thornton, Wayne Simmonds, and Jason Spezza together as a unit, because that would not. I mean, that'd be great for the opposition, but not so much the Leafs.
Yeah, that would be a, you know, I don't even know what you want to call it. That'd be the boomer line or the geezer line or something like that. But Dave, if you're looking at, you know, the philosophical shift to a certain degree, you know, like Dubas last year and even previous years before that, it was, you know, fast. It was highly skilled. And this year, after getting dumped out of the playoffs by Columbus, you're starting to see that, you know, more jam and more physicality in the lineup. Has he swung a little too far? Like, is there too much veteran leadership and jam in this lineup now? It seems like the balance has kind of been lost to a certain degree.
Well, this is frustrating from my perspective, because I have to cover this team and see this team on a regular basis more than I do the other teams in the league. And it's been evident for the last few years that this team does not have enough of a physical presence in the lineup, and that they just absolutely have defensive deficiencies up and down the lineup, lines 1 through 4, defensive pairs 1, 2, and 3. So it finally caught up to management that, okay, well, maybe we need to add these pieces into the lineup. But if you look at some of the other teams that are out there that are competing, that are battling for a Stanley Cup, they have elements in their roster that add that physicality and that jam in almost all of their lines. And some of them, like Tampa Bay, for example, are more potent than others when you can have Pat Maroon on a fourth line, when you have Barkley Goodrow, Yanni Gourde, and Blake Coleman as a third line. Altogether, they have physicality. They can get dangerous. They can create offense. You throw Alex Killorn in the mix. Andre Palat's not afraid to get dirty if he needs to help out Braden Point and Kucherov. There's none of that in Toronto's top six. And, you know, Nylander's not going to do it. Auston Matthews isn't going to do it. Marner can do it to an extent. And you've got Hyman as your number one left winger. And with all due respect to Zach Hyman, I think he's a great hockey player. He doesn't fit the mold playing alongside Willie Nylander and Auston Matthews on Toronto's top line. So you can bring in guys like Wayne Simmonds, and you can bring in Joe Thornton, and you can, you know, try to add these elements to the lineup, but they're not going to be playing significant minutes for your team. At least that's the expectation now. If Wayne Simmonds has totally reinvigorated himself and has worked on his foot speed and can play in that role, then that's a home run, because that's the type they need. A Wayne Simmonds in his prime. So making these additions now, I don't know if it's going to move the needle for them too much. They got better defensively, there's no question, by adding, you know, a couple of pieces on the blue line and adding these guys as well in the lineup. But it's window dressing.
David Pignota, our guest. So let's focus in on the Canucks, and they made the home run move of Nate Schmidt. Pretty much wildly applauded that move. And it was great. Get a great defenseman up for pennies on the dollar, but still a lot of question marks of the rest of the team. What do you see as the next move for Jim Benning and the Canucks?
Well, they're still kind of scouring the market defensively and trying to see if there's some kind of bargain deal they can get to add in another guy on that blue line. Outside of that, it's top six. You know, you lost who was effectively your first line right winger playing with Petey and JT Miller. So you've got to replace that. Even if you're moving, you know, Brock Besser up to the top line and you know, making that kind of adjustment, you still need a potent guy, offensive potent guy in your lineup to round out your top six, to play with Bo and Tanner Pearson. And they haven't had that. They haven't, you know, they let Tyler Toffoli go. There was an offer made before the ninth got out. That was, I believe, a 4-year deal that looked pretty solid. I believe it was worth more than what the Montreal Canadiens signed him for, but both sides decided to wait things out a little bit. And he's a hab now. So they've got to also replace that. Now, one of the other things they're certainly doing and continuing to do, which is what most of the teams around the league are trying to do, is free up cap space. So yes, they're still looking to move out either a Louis Erickson or Brandon Sutter. We'll see how they can pull this off. They've got certainly a couple months to do it. You have to be A, cap compliant by the start of the regular season, so whenever that is. But B, they've got, you know, I believe some internal managing that they're trying to focus in on as well, and they're not the only team that's doing that. So I believe they're still, like I said, trying to support the blue line by bringing in another veteran presence back there, but also they've got to address their top six. They need another guy that can fill and round out their offensive units.
Well, one name that keeps on popping up in Vancouver, whether it's a realistic chance or not, is Mike Hoffman. This is a guy that's probably on the radar for a lot of teams, given how many goals he scored over the past 2 or 3 years. But, you know, we've heard that he's considering and would be considering one-year deals. What do you think the ideal fit for him is? Is Vancouver an option, or do you think he wants guaranteed power play time? Because it seems like in Vancouver, that would be hard to come by.
Well, I think it's a combination of ice time, power play time, and the dollars. Are the Vancouver Canucks willing to give him $6 million a year or $5.5 million? You know, he's going to fall within five and six is what I believe the number is going to be, especially with Evgeny Dadonov signing a 3-year, $15 million contract with the Sens. So he's got a $5 million AAV. Mike Hoffman's a better player, and he's going to certainly make the argument that he deserves more. If it's a 1-year deal, so be it. He's been going back and forth on a variety of different offers. I don't think there's any long-term deals that are out there for these types of players right now. Taylor Hall, the longest term that he received on a deal, to my knowledge, was 4 years, and it was less than the $8 million AAV on a 1-year deal that he got with the Buffalo Sabres. So if Mike Hoffman's your guy, that's great. He's a goal scorer. He's what the Canucks certainly could use and need. There's a lot of teams that could use a pure sniper like him, who's going to probably pot you on this team, 30, 35, but you've got to pay for it. And the cap structure and situation that Vancouver's in right now, I just don't see that being realistic. Maybe it's a, you know, Mikael Granlund. Maybe that's the way that they go. He's going to be less. He's going to be, I'd imagine, around 3.5-4, perhaps, $1 million a year. And you could sign him for a one-year deal as well. But these guys now are willing to wait a little bit. I think Hoffman will find a home relatively soon here. I'm not sure if guys like Granlund or Eric Halla or whoever else might be, you know, part of the mix. Corey Perry, if you're looking for somebody. These players are willing to wait a little bit. Michael Grabner, for example, told me that he's going to wait till camp gets going and then A, to know what the season looks like, but B, at the same time, to know what his full options are going to be at that point. So we'll see. I think a lot of it depends on if Jim Benning is able to free up money. And even if he has to eat a little bit of salary for Louis Erickson, because he was able to bring in a guy like Nate Schmidt and shore up that blue line and their top four, I think there might be more of a willingness to do it. I just don't know how much.
Well, you talk about players, you know, not getting that term on the market this year and are willing to take those one-year deals, essentially banking on themselves to have a decent year and then go back to market next year. What changes in a year? Is it simply down to cap situations will be a little bit better that year? You know, this time next year, and that they'll have maybe a little bit more money to work with, because we know the cap's not going up.
Yeah, no, it won't be. And I think at that point, you just get one step closer, 1 year closer to things starting to balance out. And I think at that point, you can get to a scenario where a multi-year offer, a longer-term deal makes more sense and is then more appealing to both the team and to the player. So I think at that point, you know, because I would guesstimate at this point the cap, again, not next season going up, I could see there being a slight adjustment the following year. And then after that, then we're going to start to see increases in the cap once everything is balanced out again with the new U.S. TV rights and the NHL's digital streaming deals that are going to kick in. And then you've got Seattle's money a full year in that starts contributing to HRR. So I think you're probably at best two off seasons away from perhaps a slight increase in the cap, and then three away from a legitimate increase to what we're used to. So I think if you spend another year next off season, you're probably going to look at it and go, okay, well, it's not 3 years, it's going to be two, or, you know, whatever it may be. So I think there's a little bit more give and take at that point in terms of longer term deal and balancing out the money a little bit more. It's an easier pill to swallow than having to deal with another season of uncertainty that we're going to be faced with.
David Pignota, our guest. What are you hearing around the league? You know, we're seeing all these bargain deals, I guess, now, and it seems like we're kind of in a holding pattern where a lot of teams are trying to move out money, and teams that maybe have cap space to do it aren't budging unless they get significant assets. I mean, where are we at right now with agents and players and how they're feeling about how spending has gone?
There's frustration because there's absolute frustration because, I mean, there's still money that's available. You know, not all teams are going to be cap teams, but there's still salaries that are out there. And I can tell you there's some guys that are just being, I mean, the offers that have come some players' ways, like you've got a $2, $3 million player that's being offered league minimum, you know, $2, $3 million in a regular year. So there's a lot of teams that are penny pinching. There's, you know, I can use one, for example, Nashville. Nashville created a ton of cap space, and they have gone out and have been very frugal with their cap dollars and their spending. They're exploring every avenue. They touched base with Taylor Hall and were in on that. They're in on Mike Hoffman, but how that's going to work out, I'm not too sure. They're looking at alternatives from a trade perspective as well, but they're being very careful with how they're going to spend their money. And they've got money to spend. And you look at some of the other teams that are out there that have money to spend, it's the same scenario. They're not offering market value for players. They're utilizing the excuse of what's going on now, which is, from a business perspective, understandable. But at the end of the day, a lot of players are turning back and saying, okay, well, we'll just wait. Because we know if we wait longer, you're just going to come back to us and say, okay, fine, I can't give you $1.5 million, but I'm not going to give you the $800,000 offer I had before. I'll give you 1.1 or 1.2. So there hasn't been a lot of room for compromise so far with these players that are middle of the pack and lower. And I mean, again, to one extent, I get it, but a lot of frustration from the agent side and from some of these players as well, because they know at some point we're just going to get there. So why beat around the bush? Just get it over with now.
You're listening to Reach Deeper, joined by David Pignota, as we are every Friday. And Dave, Bill Foley spilled the beans on a Canadian division, which I'm sure the league loved. Your thoughts on that and what the league's reaction is? And, as far as how advanced could these talks be? Are there real legs to this?
Yeah, it's a legitimate option. It's just nothing is set in stone. I spoke with two people that are high up at the league about this shortly after Foley's interview in Vegas, his radio interview, and I just asked them point blank, are these all realistic scenarios? And they all said yes, but, I mean, we're not near making a decision as to how next season is going to look. What I believe is going to be the case, however this plays out, is that we're going to have a very geographically friendly schedule. I don't think we're going to see a lot of cross-division, cross-conference kind of scenarios play out, to be frank. I think we're going to see a lot more teams playing against their own division, however it's mapped out. If it's an all-Canadian one, there's going to be realignment across the board for next season because of, you know, these trying to keep things as geo-friendly as they can and minimize travel. Less travel or shorter travel means less dollars that have to be spent. So they're trying to find ways that could certainly, the league is, excuse me, can find ways to save as much as they can. So as teams are penny pinching a little bit, the league to a certain extent is doing so as well, but also trying to do what's in the best interest of everybody involved. They've discussed a variety of different scenarios in terms of total games on the season. Is it going to be 48? Are we looking at 52? Are we talking 60? Are we talking 68, 72, and so on? So it all depends on, A, when the season's going to start. If it is going to be sometime in January, there's still a belief that they're able to pull off a full 82-game season. If it gets closer to February or in February and on, then I just don't see a scenario where we see an 82-game season. If it is January and the season, by that I mean the Stanley Cup Finals awarded middle/end of July, then I believe that they will do whatever they can to try to condense an 82-game season. And that could mean, like I said, geo-friendly travel. You may see a lot of back-to-backs, like Vancouver may go to Edmonton and play on a Tuesday and a Wednesday to get a couple games in and then fly back. We're probably going to see a lot of teams playing four games in 7 nights. And that's why we've also seen some teams kind of load up between the pipes and make sure that they've got a strong starter and then a very strong number two, quote-unquote number two, to help carry some of the load for next season. So I think that's all coming into play. But I think, guys, realistically, we're about a month away from being close to any kind of decision on how next season is going to look like, or I guess this season will look like.
And, we've heard a lot from Bill Foley as well, and just, you know, the owners around the league, mm-hmm. not much of an appetite for going forward without the ability to have fans in the stands, right?
Yeah, I actually spoke with two owners before Foley even made his comments, which everyone was kind of on the same page, that there isn't an appetite. And I think those, at least Foley's words, were kind of taken a little bit out of context, or at least he didn't illustrate them as well as he may have thought. But I don't believe, well, first of all, I don't think there's going to be a full season without fans. I think at some point the league is going to work towards an incremental number of fans that gets increased as the season progresses. Of course, it all has to do with geography and all has to do with how each market is doing based on all this COVID stuff. But I don't think there's going to be a scenario that plays out where there are absolutely no fans in the building for the full season. I don't see that being realistic. And from that perspective, that would just be disastrous for the National Hockey League to have to go through that. At the same time, there's not a huge appetite for having to have less fans in the building, but there's not really going to be a choice. So I think there's going to be a gradual increase. I believe Gary Bettman spoke to this in his during the Stanley Cup final in his State of the League address that he always does during the final. I believe we're going to see an environment, and it might not be every city, but I think an environment where some of the teams at least will have some percentage of fans in the building to start, and then that will slowly increase until they can get to a full capacity in, you know, late spring, early summer is kind of what I'm hearing. But we'll see, obviously, how things progress. But that seems to be a realistic acceptance for a lot of owners that that's going to be the case.
Pags, we appreciate the time as always, man. Talk soon.
You got it, guys. Have a good weekend.